Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook and Countermove, your home for fantasy MMA. I'm Brian Heminger, and today I'll be joined by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Thursday's UFC Fight Night 80 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will be breaking down the fight cards from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. UFC 194 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass this Thursday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass, obviously, is a women's strawweight contest featuring Kaylin Curran, who is 3-2 overall, taking on Emily Kagan, who is also 3-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Curran minus 300, the comeback on Kagan plus 220. And right now, Curran is sitting at minus 335. The comeback on Kagan is plus 275. And of course, that's at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. So make sure you guys check those guys out. And a little bit more action coming in on Curran. And you know what? I understand it. Curran is a very talented fighter. Unfortunately, she's 0-2 in the UFC right now, which doesn't really sit well, I'm sure, with the UFC, with her coaches, with her camp and everything. And this is a very winnable fight against Emily Kagan. Kagan is a very solid veteran. She's faced a lot of good competition, and she's a tough out. I mean, she's not an easy person to dominate. She's not an easy person to finish. So it's going to be a fight. But the problem here is, I mean, in every area across the board, Curran has the advantage. She's got the speed. I think she's got the athleticism. She's got the power. She's going to be able to push the pace. She's going to basically outpoint Kagan. Possibly, if there's going to be a finish in this fight, I believe it's going to be Curran as well, because Kagan is not really a finisher. She's more of a grinder, more of basically try to point you, outpoint you, and win a decision type of fight. And that's why she makes things close at times as well. So Kagan, again, a very solid vet, so it's going to be a test for Curran, but I think the UFC honestly set this fight up for Curran to get the win. I mean, the fight IQ bothers me a little bit with Curran. She was dominating in her last fight. She was cruising to the scorecards, and then she ends up getting submitted towards the end of the round against Chambers, and that should never happen. The Paige Van Zandt fight, I can understand it. I thought she was going to be a little bit more competitive in that fight, but Van Zandt really looked off the charts, and she looked great. So this is definitely a must-win fight for Curran, and they're giving her somebody that really can't finish her. So I think they expect Curran to basically outpoint Kagan and win a convincing decision, and I think that's basically the way it's going to go. Again, Kagan's a very well-rounded girl. I mean, she trains at Jackson, so you know they're going to have a good game plan in place, but I just don't think on the feet she has it. On the ground, she has it. Just anywhere the fight takes place, Curran is going to be ahead of her. So it's Curran's fight to win or lose, and I'm going to go that way with her as well.
I'm just going to tell it like it is. I don't really think Emily Kagan's a UFC-caliber fighter. If you really want to look at it, she's pretty much lost four fights in a row because she lost to Rose Namajunas in Invicta, and then she earned, and I'm using quotation marks here, her UFC appearance and her appearance on The Ultimate Fighter by beating Ashley Cummins in a fight that I thought she lost. And then she lost to Joanne Calderwood on the show in her first fight. And then she was beat convincingly by Angela Hill in her UFC debut. So she just has not looked very good. I mean, really all she's got going for is she's tough. For the most part, she can hang in there. She's faced some decent opposition, and she's only really been finished by Rose. So give her a little credit there, but I just don't think she's that skilled. And at 34 years old, she doesn't really have a whole lot to offer in the women's strawweight division either. She does train out of a great gym at Jackson's MMA, but they can only do so much. I just don't think they're miracle workers in this department. And I think unless Curran completely self-implodes, which is possible, then it's Curran's fight to lose. I mean, Curran is just 10 years younger at 24 years old. She's better, in my opinion, on the ground. She's the better striker. The only thing that Curran really has had a lot of issues with so far is conditioning. She just pushes a little bit too hard early, and then she runs out of steam, and she's been finished late in both of her UFC fights. Now, she was going to lose the fight to Paige VanZant in the first place, but the last one, I mean, she had Alex Chambers in the bag, and then she gave up a late submission. So she needs to be careful, maybe pace herself a little bit better here, because I don't know if she'll be able to finish Kagan. But if she paces herself, doesn't run out of gas, and doesn't make any stupid mistakes, then Curran should win this fight relatively easily. So I'm going to pick Kaylin Curran. Now moving up to the featherweight division, we have Zubera Tuhugov, who is 17-3, taking on Felipe Nover, who is 11-5-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Tuhugov -190, the comeback on Nover +115. This line has skyrocketed a little bit. Right now it's sitting Tuhugov -330, the comeback on Nover is +270. Some more support coming in on Tuhugov. No respect coming in towards Nover at all at this point. I mean, I understand the Russian hype. Tuhugov is a very talented fighter. I mean, he's looked great thus far in his UFC career as well. And it was a very impressive performance and finish over Chavez in his last fight. So far coming in, Tuhugov has performed well in both of his fights, and he's only going to get more comfortable, and he's going to get better and better with time. So I do understand the hype behind it, but he has himself a fight here in Nover. I mean, Nover is one of those guys that's always been flying under the radar. Of course, the Ultimate Fighter hype originally when he came into that final before he lost to Escudero, a lot of people were thinking that he was the next big thing, and it was because of his skill set. I mean, Nover is good everywhere the fight takes place. He's good standing. Obviously, I think the best part of his game is actually his grappling skill. The guy's a really good grappler, capable of finishing the fight on the floor as well. His stand-up skill is not bad. He's got a little bit of power, so he's a complete fighter. Now, in his last fight against Nam, that was a pretty controversial decision. A lot of people think it could have went the other way, and I could understand that. But overall, throughout his career, Nover has fought some really good competition, and he's done well with them. I mean, even if you look outside of the UFC against Helton Bellator, I mean, he was in a really close competitive battle there that could have went his way, honestly. And then outside of the UFC, again, another one of his losses, which was a close fight, was against Tony Martin. And then outside of that, I mean, he basically ran through the competition. He's looked great. So I think Nover is another one of these fighters that's getting his second stint, his second chance in the UFC. Started off on a good note for him, even though it was a little bit controversial, getting a win here. And I think momentum's on his side, and he's going to continue to look for a win here over Tuhugov, obviously, because he is the more skilled fighter. Now, Tuhugov is going to have the explosiveness. I think he's going to be faster. He's going to be better on the feet. He's going to be a lot more dangerous too. He's a little bit unorthodox with his striking. He loves to throw spinning techniques, so he's very dangerous, and he's got power to go along with it. So on the feet, Nover is going to get tagged. He's going to get beat up a little bit, and Tuhugov isn't going to be the easiest guy to take down either. So that's why he is the rightful favorite. But where the line's going out, you guys got to be careful out there, because I think that Nover's probably going to be one of the better fights that really Tuhugov has had thus far in his career as well. So Nover's going to be game. He's got the experience level. He's faced good competition in his past, and I think we're going to see a competitive matchup. And if the fight does hit the floor, Nover's actually going to have the advantage here. Overall, as far as pure pick goes, I do lean with the Russian. I think Tuhugov is capable of getting the nod here. I think he can win on the scorecards, or he could possibly finish Nover. Nover's defense on the feet's okay at times, but he does get tagged. He has been knocked out in the past as well. So with Tuhugov's unorthodox but technical and powerful striking skill, I think we could see that happen, and at least he could probably squeak out a decision here. But I think it is going to be competitive, and I think there's going to be times in this fight that Nover has a shot to possibly pull off the upset win here. So my lean is Tuhugov, not as confident as all of you out there, but I do think he gets the job done and wins this fight, though.
Yeah, Tuhugov is a terrific fighter. We just haven't seen him in a while because he's been out due to some injuries. Nover, in his UFC return, he got the win against Nam, but it was not a very impressive performance. It was an ugly, very wrestling-focused fight. And if he was that worried about Yuichul Nam striking, then he's in big trouble against Tuhugov striking. And Nam even was able to take him down at times. Now, Tuhugov, I do think that Nover could be able to take him down, but Tuhugov is a combat sambo champion, so he's got some grappling background. So I think Nover could get himself in a little bit of trouble if Tuhugov is able to bounce up quickly. And on the feet, while Nover is a decent offensive fighter in terms of striking, Tuhugov is significantly better. You know, training out of that Tiger Muay Thai gym, Tuhugov does a great job of moving backwards and countering. So if Nover's forced into a situation where he has to stand and trade, I think he's going to, if he reaches on anything, if he overextends, he's going to get clocked. Tuhugov works some really heavy looping hooks and short hooks. And he also has some pretty decent kicks that are low. So I think it's just kind of a whirling buzzsaw on the inside from Tukhugov, and he's very athletic. And you look at the ages of these guys, Tukhugov being 24 years old to Nover's 31, I think Tukhugov is going to have that quickness, speed, athleticism advantage over Nover. And really, we could see a totally new and improved Tukhugov after all that time off, because with all that time off, I think that he's only going to get significantly better with all the extra time he'll have be working on his game. So I think unless Nover is able to get this fight to the canvas repeatedly and then stay on top of Tukhugov over the course of three rounds, then I think at some point Tukhugov knocks him out, or Tukhugov just outpoints him on the feet and picks up a decision. So my pick is definitely going to be Zubera Tukhugov. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have a pair of UFC newcomers as Danny Roberts, who is 11-1, battles Nathan Coy, who is 14-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Roberts -170, the comeback on Coy +130. Right now, looking over five times, it's Roberts -155, the comeback on Coy is +135. So another spot where the line margins could just kind of tighten up, and there is two-way action on this fight. Nothing crazy as of yet, because really what you have here is Roberts being your striker and Coy being your grappler, your wrestler. So you have striker versus grappler type of affair. And a lot of times you see the wrestler kind of win those matchups stylistically. But the problem is here, Coy is at age 37 now, Roberts is 27, so you got the youthful prospect in Roberts coming up, and he's facing a savvy vet in Coy, which I have a ton of respect for him. I mean, dating back to his sport fight days, the guy's been around for a long time, and he's just a great grinder. He's been underrated throughout his whole career, and honestly, he should have been in the UFC a lot sooner than this. I know he made it to the UFC based on his Ultimate Fighter show performances. I mean, he only went 1-1. He got choked out on the show, but did win a decision as well. And outside of that, though, I mean, Coy is a type of guy that, again, he's fought quality competition, and in most cases, he's been able to control the fight, get it to the floor, grind his opponents out. He's capable of submitting some, and he's got a little bit of power to go with it. But the problem is his chin is definitely suspect. And against anybody that can kind of sprawl and brawl with him and stand with him and has knockout power, exactly what Roberts is capable of doing, it is a little bit of a problem. So it is definitely an intriguing matchup because Roberts, again, I've talked about it, he's a highly touted prospect. His striking game is on point. I mean, really great boxing. I mean, his hands are fast. He's powerful with them. He mixes in strong kicks from time to time as well. He's got good footwork and speed to go along with that power. So on the feet, he's everything that you want to see. The problem with Roberts is, I mean, if anything is suspect in his game, it is his ground game. His takedown defense is solid, but it definitely needs some work, and he's going to face one of the best wrestlers he's faced in his career thus far. So ground game is definitely his weakness, although against lesser opponents, he is capable of pulling off even some submissions off his back. But the problem is Roberts ends up losing the position too many times, and a guy like Coy can definitely exploit that. But as the fight goes, I mean, if you look back at Roberts' last fight against even Wallhead, which is a savvy vet, Jimmy Wallhead is, I mean, a tremendous fighter in his own right. I know he's getting up there a little bit in age as well in fight years, but Wallhead was able to control the fight against Roberts, got him down, got him in a lot of bad positions. But when Roberts did get up to his feet, it didn't take much. I mean, he's got that kind of special knockout power where, he ended up clipping Wallhead, who has a pretty decent chin, and put him out. So Roberts is one of those special strikers that even though he could be losing the fight, I mean, three rounds is kind of a tough route to go with him because he's going to have plenty of opportunities along the way to finish the fight. So I think that's kind of what's going to play out here. That's why you're seeing Roberts as a favorite here as well. I think that Roberts probably will get put on his back, but he's going to find a way to get back up on his feet. I don't think Coy's going to finish him on the ground. And then on the feet is where he's going to have success, and he's probably going to catch Coy along the way and possibly knock him out and win that route. So I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Roberts, but this is definitely an awesome fight because you have your wrestler versus striker, and those are always intriguing fights for sure.
If this fight stays standing for any significant amount of time, then Nathan Coy's going to be in big, big trouble because Danny Roberts has crazy power. And with that big-time boxing background that he hails from, I mean, it's not going to take much. You factor in that this is a huge age gap of 28 for Roberts to 37 for Coy. I mean, Coy making his UFC debut at 37 years old is wild, but it's deserved. The guy fought in MFC. He became the MFC champion. He was a solid competitor in Strikeforce. He was a good fighter in Bellator. He was on the Ultimate Fighter, ATT versus Black Zillions. And Believe it or not, this is actually an ATT versus Black Zillions matchup, with Roberts recently moving to the Black Zillions gym while Coy is training at American Top Team. And the stylistic matchup is phenomenal. I mean, Coy absolutely, 100% needs to drag this fight to the ground immediately and then stay on top, because if he doesn't do that, he is getting knocked out, and he's going to get knocked out in brutal fashion. So, that's basically what it boils down to. And Roberts, he does have okay takedown defense if he knows the takedown's coming. If he's just circling around and using footwork, he's able to stop takedowns. His problem is, especially if you go back and watch that last fight against Jim Walhead that earned him his UFC debut, is when he commits to his strikes, he reaches, he loses his balance, and he makes takedowns extremely easy. And he also makes some mistakes on the ground where he gets sloppy with trying to get back up to the feet. He panics a little bit, and he gives up dominant positions. And I think if Jim Walhead was able to easily transition and pass his guard during some sloppy transitions, and then even almost take his back and work for the rear naked choke, that was actually the opening that Roberts used to get back up. But if he was able to do that, then I think Nathan Coy could really do that. So the other thing you have to factor in is, could Coy run out of steam? If he gets tired, then he has absolutely no chance, because he needs to just be on Roberts like glue this whole fight. And the other thing that you got to factor in is it only takes a couple seconds of freedom for Roberts. I mean, you watch that Walhead fight again, going back to that, he was on his back on the ground for about 4 minutes of that first round. He gets back up to his feet, and then pow, it took like one shot. It wasn't even like a crazy shot, and Walhead crumpled in a heap. So I actually think, after watching that last fight, that Nathan Coy's wrestling is good enough that he can take Roberts down and stay on top of him and either pick up that submission victory or grind this out and win a decision. It's just extremely scary, and I'm picking Nathan Coy, but I have very little confidence, because seriously, it's only going to take one instant and one mistake, and Roberts could finish it. But my pick is going to be Nathan Coy. Now, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Santiago Ponzinibbio, who is 20-3, taking on Andreas Stahl, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Ponzinibbio opens -260, the comeback on Stahl +180. And right now, looking over at the line, it's -190 for Ponzinibbio. Stahl is +165. So about a 15-cent drop in the line. Line margins have tightened up a little bit as well for the dog. And a little bit more action coming in his way. A little bit surprised, because I thought, really, based on his performance last time against Burns, even though it was a close fight in Stahl's UFC debut, I mean, Burns took that fight on short notice. He was moving up, obviously, a weight class to 170 as well, and he normally fights at 155. And Burns was able to pull off a victory, even though it was very competitive. So I didn't think many people would give Stahl that much respect, but really, Dogger pass situation seems about right. So I do agree kind of with the early action that comes in here, because Ponzinibbio is a talented fighter. He's definitely a stud on the feet. He's a warrior. He's got that mentality. I mean, look at his Larkin fight, but just beyond that as well. He's faced a lot of good, talented fighters throughout his career thus far. He's been able to basically sprawl and brawl against most, but he has been put on his back, and he's been controlled a little bit on the ground. And I think that's kind of his kryptonite at times. But here, he should be stronger a little bit. I mean, according to, again, using that scenario with the lightweight moving up to 170, you would think that the Ponzinibbio is going to have the strength edge over Stahl in this spot. He's going to have the striking edge as well. So it's kind of his fight to win or lose. I'm just expecting a better performance from Stahl in this spot. It's going to be his second fight now in the UFC. Should be a little bit more comfortable. I know he's had a little bit of a layoff with injuries that he's trying to recover from, so he's got pulled from a couple fights or whatnot. But still, I think that it is going to be a very competitive matchup, and I think that Stahl's going to kind of show up and just prove that he does belong in the UFC. I think the striking is going to be fairly competitive. I think Stahl might be actually the overall better MMA fighter. I think he utilizes, even though, I mean, you don't see it as clear at times, but Stahl is capable of putting the fight on the floor if he needs to. He's more than capable of controlling the fight up against the cage as well. And I think we're going to see a pretty evenly matched fight here throughout. And I'm actually going to kind of go with the dog here. And I think the stall is going to be able to kind of not maybe finish Ponzinibbio, because Ponzinibbio is pretty tough to finish. I mean, he's going to have to knock him out if he does finish him, I think, here. But overall, I think Stall can win, basically outpoint Ponzinibbio and win a close, hard-fought decision battle here. So a great fight, because these guys are going to play out in every aspect of the MMA game for sure. I think we will see it play out on the ground a little bit. We will see it play out standing as well, and we'll see some action throughout the fight. And then we are going to see some boring spots as well when they're kind of clinched up against the fence, not doing much. So we're going to see a complete MMA fight. We're going to see a competitive battle, and I do like the way Stall matches up. So I've been going kind of back and forth on this fight a little bit, but I'm going to have to go with Stall here. I think that with everything lined up here, this is a good spot for him to come back, get some respect, and pull off his first UFC win, and then maybe get some momentum going for him in the future.
I think a lot of people are disrespecting Stall because of that UFC debut where he won the first round against Gilbert Burns, who had moved up to welterweight to make his debut on short notice, and then ended up losing the next two. But Stall did, you know, suffer some injuries right at the end of that first round, and I think that did affect him and caused him to lose that decision. And against a guy like Ponzinibbio, it is going to be a tough test for him, because while Stall is a solid overall fighter, very well-rounded, he is more well-rounded, in my opinion, than Ponzinibbio. Ponzinibbio is a very dangerous striker, pushes a high pace, and has a ton of heart. I mean, this is a guy that does not give up in fights. You look at Ponzinibbio's fight against Ryan LaFlair. I mean, he was getting beat up, he was getting worked over, he was getting taken down repeatedly, and then he just almost finished the fight late in the third round. So he's always in there, he's always dangerous, but I think this is a bad matchup for him. Stall is a very strong wrestling base, and he trains out of the All-Stars gym alongside Gustafsson and all those guys. And if you watch him fight, not just his UFC debut, but his fights before, he has solid clinch positioning, some pretty good overall fundamental striking, and then when he gets inside, I mean, he can really pepper you with some dirty boxing, some knees, and he pushes a pretty strong pace. So I think what's going to happen here is Ponzinibbio will probably control from distance. That's the one spot that Stall wants to avoid. And then when it gets close, I think Stall and Ponzinibbio will be relatively even in that phone booth area, and then everywhere else, Stall should have an advantage. If Stall pushes this fight into the clinch, he's going to be on the inside for the most part. He's going to be landing knees to the legs, to the body, landing some elbows. And then if he gets into the ground, Stahl's going to be in great shape. And we have seen Ponzinibbio taken down. Now, obviously, Ryan LaFlair is a very accomplished wrestler, and Stall is probably not quite on that level, but Stall is very physically strong, and I think that he should be able to get some takedowns in this fight, especially with the way that Ponzinibbio strikes. He does tend to commit a little too hard and get himself off balance. I think he can open himself up to some pretty good shots for Stall to pick up a couple double legs. So unless Stall is completely unable to get any of his clinches or takedowns going, then I see Stall picking up a decision at some point, maybe even wearing Ponzinibbio down and getting a late finish. But for the most part, I see a decision victory for Stall and picking up the upset here. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Aljamain Sterling, who is 11-0, taking on Johnny Eduardo, who is 27-9. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Sterling minus 400, the comeback on Eduardo plus 280. Right now, looking over the line of five dimes, Sterling minus 700. Eduardo is plus 500. So no respect coming in on the dog at all. All action coming in on Sterling. Not really that surprised, although I thought I opened it at a somewhat fair spot. I mean, Eduardo's one of those guys that, again, kind of flies under the radar, and people don't give him that much respect. I mean, he's a very talented fighter. I know he has a huge win over Wineland recently, but that was back in 2014, which he hasn't fought since. I believe it was in May 2014. So he's had a long layoff here. And Eduardo's more known for his striking, of course. He's from Nova Unao as well, so he has a great camp behind him. And he's got kind of that mentality where you sprawl and brawl. He's technical with the striking skill. He's got good accuracy, and he's got a ton of power. I mean, look what the Wineland fight, I have a ton of respect for Wineland. He's a tremendous fighter, but I'm not even shocked now. I mean, easier said after the case, how that fight played out, because Eduardo is such a good striker, and he was able to clip Wineland. And this is kind of a freaky spot, because the same type of thing – happen here. I know Wineland was kind of maybe at that spot where in fight years, especially, he was hitting that spot where he could possibly start declining. And we could see a little bit of that happening with Wineland. And Sterling's kind of the young gun that's up and coming, and he's really getting better and improving. So it's not the same scenario in that regard. But the line, I mean, opening for 400, it was similar in the Wineland fight, and they bet it up to almost 1,000. Right now we're seeing the line around 700. So again, no respect being paid towards Eduardo here in this spot. And he's a very talented fighter that does sprawl and brawl well. So he's going to need to do that against Sterling. Sterling's improving all areas, of course, training with Sarah Longo, another guy that comes from a good camp. His ground game, I think, is his best attribute for sure. Even though he does have some speed and power on the feet, he has decent fight IQ. But I think his wrestling, his submission game, when he gets top position on the ground, he's pretty relentless there as well. He's got that killer instinct. There's just a lot of great things to like about Sterling, and he should be the rightful favorite. He just has to be careful, because the longer this fight stays upright, the longer he could be in some serious trouble, and Eduardo could pull off another upset along the way. So I am going to pick Sterling to win, because he's just a more complete MMA fighter. I think if this fight does hit the ground, he could very well submit Eduardo. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Or he could, and he should, obviously, if the fight hits the scorecards, he should win a decision as well. But I think if it does hit the scorecards, it'll probably be a little bit more competitive than most of us realize. But I do lean towards Sterling, because he is, again, he's a talented prospect. He's also been out for a while, and he's been itching to get back in there and fight. So now's his chance. But the UFC didn't really do him a favor here by giving him, I don't want to say a no-name fighter, but guy that isn't as popular amongst, you know, the casual fans. It is kind of a risk, because Sterling should win this fight. Most people expect him to win it. And if he loses this fight, his stock's going to drop severely. So not an easy fight for Sterling. I think it's a little bit tighter than the current line indicates, at minus 700. But that all being said, you have to favor Sterling in this spot. And I'm going to pick him, because he is just the more complete fighter, and he does seem to improve fight by fight. So I like that.
Yeah, I just think this is a really bad matchup for Johnny Eduardo. If you go back and watch Eduardo's big upset of Eddie Wineland, it was not a fluke by any stretch of the imagination. Eduardo was working great leg kicks. He was knocking Wineland off balance. And then when Wineland started to get frustrated and started being more aggressive, Eduardo clocked him with a big looping right hand counter and then put him away the second he saw that he was stunned. I mean, it was a picture-perfect performance, and he was setting up everything well. He is a very, very talented striker. I mean, this guy was the Muay Thai coach at Nova Uniao, so, I mean, you know that he has all the fundamentals down pat. He's very experienced on the feet. The problem is, I don't see this fight staying on the feet very long. Aljamain Sterling takes care of business. I mean, this guy trains out of Cerro Longo. Great environment for him. He's a tremendous athlete, and he is probably the best wrestler in the bantamweight division right now. This guy gets fights to the floor in a hurry, and then his top position is suffocating. And when he's there, he's either looking for a submission or he's looking to mash your face in with his fists or elbows. And he is all business in the cage, and I love that about him. And he doesn't care if it bothers people that he doesn't want to stand and bang with a good striker. He has a good fight IQ. So as incredibly talented as Johnny Eduardo is on the feet, I don't see the Funkmaster hanging around with him on there very long. I think Sterling pushes this fight into the fence, drags it to the ground, and then just starts working over Eduardo with strikes until he can either get a TKO or pick up a submission. So I think this is going to be pretty one-sided unless something happens and Sterling is completely neutralized with his wrestling. But for the most part, I expect Aljamain Sterling to roll here. So my pick is Sterling. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Antonio Carlos Jr., who is 6-1, taking on Kevin Casey, who is 10-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Carlos Jr. minus 245, the comeback on Kevin Casey plus 175 right now, looking over the line of five dimes. It's Carlos Jr. minus 275, the comeback on Casey is plus 235. So a little bit more action coming in Carlos Jr.'s way. Not really surprised. I mean, it's not like Casey gets a ton of respect at the betting window. I mean, every fight, it seems like a lot of people are looking to fade Casey, but man, you got to give the guy credit. He has put the work in. I think he's the best that he's ever been in his entire career. And that win over Alcantara looked terrible in that fight, but you got to give Casey a lot of credit as well. Because he got the W there and he did exactly what he had to do. His win, even though got overturned over Bubba Bush, that was impressive as well. That's the kind of stuff that you can see from Casey. He is explosive. He's a great athlete. He obviously has a lot of power behind him, and he utilizes utilizes his ground game really well, but he's gaining more confidence. He's gaining more skill. I mean, training at Black House has definitely impacted his game in a positive way. Casey's got all-time confidence now. Everything is going really well for Casey, but unfortunately for him here, this is a type of fight that the UFC obviously matched. I mean, you have another young gun. That's going to be a trend on this card. If you're looking at most of these fights, you're going to see one fighter that's a lot younger than the other fighter here. It's almost like they're setting up some of these young guys to fight very savvy, talented vets, get solid wins on the resumes, and then move on from there. So I think this is one of those spots for Casey. I mean, he is 34 years old. Carlos Jr. is about 25 or so. He's a younger, fresher fighter. He did drop down to 185 in his last fight. He looked great in doing so as well. And Carlos Jr., of course, he's highlighted by a great ground game. I mean, on the ground, the guy can submit most people. On the feet, he has a lot of power. He's getting better in his striking, more confidence as well. He's training at American Top Team now, so that's only going to help him in that regard as well. So he's becoming a more complete fighter, has a lot of power. His wrestling is getting better. That is his kryptonite, though. So this is an intriguing fight because of that. You're going to see Carlos Jr., which did suffer a loss to Patrick Cummings. I know that was at 205, but Cummings was able to basically dominate the ground on him. He didn't get caught in a submission, and he was able to control the fight. And Jr. didn't have much to say about that, really. So Kevin Casey's going to have to basically follow that same blueprint here to win over Jr. I just don't think he's going to have the gas tank, even though his gas tank has gotten better. I mean, Casey has worked on that aspect as well. He used to, I think, get tired and fade a lot easier than he does now, but he's still going to slow up in round two and round three enough that I think the takedowns, if he's able to have some success in round one, they're not going to come as easy in round two and round three. Carlos Jr. has enough power on the feet. I think he could do some damage along the way as well. And he might possibly, even though Casey's ground game is good and he's never really been submitted, I think that Casey could possibly lose to Jr. on the ground as well as the fight goes, maybe later round. So it is Carlos Jr.'s fight to win or lose. I am going to lean with the favorite here in Carlos Jr. I think he gets the job done.
This matchup is all about what happens with Kevin Casey in that first round, because as we all know, this guy is an extremely strong starter. He pushes a high pace early. He's got power on the feet, briefly on the inside, if he can, you know, test Carlos Jr.'s chin. And then, of course, he has a wicked ground game where he can quickly latch on submissions. The problem with Casey that has plagued him throughout his entire career is if he doesn't put his opponent away quickly, for the most part, he usually fades badly and then gets finished by TKO. Now, lately, Casey's been doing much better. I mean, you look at that fight against Bubba Bush. Now, he did end up testing positive for dristanolone in that fight, but, I mean, you got to give him credit. He looked terrific. He cracked Bubba Bush on the feet and then pounced on him and finished him with elbows in 1 minute and 1 second. And in his last fight, something that really surprised me was the fact that he won a decision. So maybe he is starting to work on those flaws a little bit. Now, I don't think that they're perfected by any means, but Antonio Carlos Jr. can't just sit back if he gets out of the first round against Kevin Casey. Now, Carlos Jr. has a lot of power on the feet. He is going to be, in my opinion, the more technical striker on the feet. He's probably going to be the more dangerous striker and the more diverse striker, because I really only see Casey being dangerous early with his boxing. And I think Carlos Jr. can land kicks, he can land knees, he can work some elbows on the feet. And Carlos Jr. has a dangerous ground game as well. You saw that in his last fight, in his middleweight debut. He looked terrific, you know, just completely worked over Eddie Gordon. So I see Carlos Jr. doing a lot of good things in this fight. I just think he has to be careful about playing with fire a little bit, with going into Kevin Casey's guard early, because Casey is very adept at looking for triangle chokes, looking for arm bars, stuff like that. Carlos Jr. is a solid ground fighter, so he probably should be able to avoid most of those dangerous situations. But the smartest thing to do here is to play it safe a little bit, let Casey punch himself out, and then start working from there. Because as you saw in, say, the Josh Salmon fight, Casey looked great early and then just became a punching bag and ate a ton of knees along the fence until that fight got finished. So I think as long as Antonio Carlos Jr. doesn't get put away quickly, then it's his fight to lose. He'll at least win the last two rounds and probably win a decision, or he can win by TKO. So my pick is going to be Antonio Carlos Jr. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Omari Akhmedov, who is 15-2, taking on Sergio Moraes, who is 9-3. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Close to a pick on Akhmedov, minus 125, Moraes, minus 115 was my opener. Right now, it's Akhmedov, minus 140. The comeback of Moraes is plus 120, so a little bit more action coming in on Akhmedov at the moment. This is a tough one. I mean, honestly, I could see the line flip easily. I mean, Moraes is one of those guys that has an outstanding ground game. I mean, his jiu-jitsu speaks for itself. Once the fight's on the floor, he's the type of guy that just is able to submit you quickly. I mean, you could look back at his win over Magny, Neil Magny. He got the fight to the floor. Man, phenomenal how fast he finished that triangle choke as well. He's just so smooth, so technical. I mean, the guy is a beast on the ground for sure. He's getting a little bit better in all aspects of his game. His stand-up game is improving for sure as well. So there's a lot of good things to like about Moraes. But again, it's another one of those spots where you have a guy that's getting a little bit older in age, 33 years old. Akhmedov is a little bit younger. He's 28. Akhmedov has shown signs of being a great fighter, having a lot of potential, even though he's also showed some signs of just bad cardio, bad conditioning, bad fight IQ as well. And that Gunnar Nelson fight, in my opinion, that was awful. I mean, he from the beginning, he was just not even in that fight at all. I mean, even though Gunnar Nelson's a very talented guy, where Akhmedov is right now, that he shouldn't have gotten dominated that easily. I mean, Gunnar Nelson just basically ran through him and finished him by sub. So that was a little bit disappointing. And then, of course, in the fight before Gunnar Nelson, he ended up getting in a slugfest, almost got knocked out as well. So there is some flaws in his game. Conditioning is one. He seems to have improved that a little bit. He's working a little bit harder. His stamina is good enough to survive and complete three rounds. He proved that against Nielsen, which was a very tough challenge as well, because Nielsen is similar to Moraes. He's a good ground fighter. So he had to basically overcome that, be careful on the ground in that spot as well. And he was able to get the decision there. And then against Ebersole, man, he displayed some really good striking in that spot. So there's a lot of good things to like Akhmedov. But again, there's some flaws in his game that kind of make you scratch your head and worry about him. And if this fight hits the floor, there's no doubt that I think Moraes is going to be able to finish Akhmedov as well. So it's basically your striker versus grappling matchup, even though Akhmedov is more than just a striking-based fighter. I mean, he's got a complete game. It's just Moraes dominates the ground so well that I don't think Akhmedov could last with him either. So it all depends on how this fight plays out. I'm leaning a little bit more towards Akhmedov. I think he's a younger, fresher fighter. He's training at Jackson's, which is not a bad thing right now. I think that that camp has a lot of momentum going for him. And game planning, everything's going to come into play here. He knows what to expect from Ray. So if he's able to maintain this on the feet, I think his knockout power is going to be significant enough that he could do some damage along the way or simply outpoint Ray for three rounds and win that way. So it is Akhmedov's fight to win or lose. He just has to be careful. If it hits the floor, the confidence level drops extremely and it shifts over to Ray. So this is a competitive fight, a competitive line, and one that is going to definitely prove to be huge for the winner, because the winner is going to move up the welterweight ladder, I think, and going to get a lot more respect, and the loser is probably just going to get thrown in the mix and probably have a few more losses heading their way. So I am leaning towards Akhmedov. I think he is capable of getting the job done here, so we'll see if it plays out that way.
This is definitely a tricky matchup, because if you look at Akhmedov's one loss in the UFC, he got absolutely destroyed by Gunnar Nelson. And Gunnar Nelson has a very similar level ground attack to Sergio Moraes. Now, Nelson is a little bit better on the feet than Moraes, but still, I mean, if either of these guys get on top of you, you're in huge, huge trouble. And Akhmedov got worked on the canvas. But you look at Sergio Moraes' recent performances, and I mean, You just kind of look and say, what have you done for me lately? And his last fight against Mikhail Lebeau was atrocious. He stood way too long against a guy that normally competes at lightweight and isn't even that great of a lightweight. And he was just standing and banging and not working for the takedown. And he was losing good portions of that fight. I mean, you could almost argue that he lost before he finally got it to the ground. And then even when he did get it to the ground, he wasn't able to get a finish. And I'm worried that maybe he, you know, suffered some damage to those knees. He doesn't quite have that explosion or confidence to get takedowns and get fights to the canvas. And if that's the case, then I think Akhmedov could work over Moraes on the feet. So very, very interesting matchup here because both fighters have very one-sided advantages because Moraes is still not a very good striker. He has a little bit of power, as you saw in his tough Brazil finale where he almost knocked out Cesar Mutanch. But for the most part, he's not very good in the stand-up. He doesn't really have a lot of technique. He just kind of wings stuff hard. And Akhmedov, he's definitely improving his technique. He has great game planning in his corner with Greg Jackson's gym. You saw that in his last fight against Brian Ebersaw, perfectly kicking Ebersaw's leg as he was planting it and injuring it, and Ebersaw wasn't able to continue after the first round. And Akhmedov has a lot of power on the feet. He is hittable, but I don't think that's a huge problem against somebody like Moraes. It'll become a problem against, you know, really good technical strikers, but this is a good situation for him. And obviously, Akhmedov is not very good if he's on his back. So, 100%, if Sergio Moraes cannot get this fight to the ground, I think he gets knocked out or loses a decision. If Akhmedov gets taken down, I think he gets submitted. So, very, very intriguing on who's able to kind of impose their will on their opponent here. But I'm going to side with Akhmedov. Moraes just looked really rusty and out of sorts in that last fight. You have to question the fight IQ or maybe just his physical ability. And until he proves that he can get fights to the ground again or he wants to get fights to the ground again, then I'm going to side with somebody on the talent level of Akhmedov that I think will be able to pressure him and keep that fight standing and land those big shots that Moraes will not be able to counter. So my pick is going to be Omari Akhmedov. Now headlining the preliminary card is a welterweight contest featuring Tim Means, who is 24-7-1, taking on John Howard, who is 23-11. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Means -350, the comeback on Howard +250, and right now looking over the line five times, it's -330 for Means, the comeback on Howard is +270. So another spot where line margins tighten up a little bit and some two-way action coming in and nothing significant to shift the odds drastically at all. So it's a tough fight, and the line I think is probably set at a good spot because, I mean, really at this point, even though these guys are closer in age, I think Means has more of the upside. Honestly, I mean, Howard has had a heck of a career, successful career. He's pulled off some great wins, some great upsets along the way as well because of his style. I mean, he has a little bit of everything. Of course, he's got some good wrestling. He's got some good power on the feet. He mixes up his boxing and kickboxing really well. He's got great fight IQ. Typically, he's got pretty decent stamina. Now, at times, we've seen that not be the case recently because he seems to slow up a little bit, maybe not be as active as you'd like to see at times. But overall, you know what you're getting. You're getting quality from Howard. He can compete with the best of them. I mean, throughout his career, he's been like that. So he's not an easy out at all. But the problem is here, I think, Means, I mean, fighting at 170, he's obviously doesn't have to cut that weight. I think he's a different level of fighter at 170. He's a little bit more comfortable. He's proven that. I mean, his win over Sullivan, Means just went right through him. So then, of course, he had a setback in his last fight against Brown, but he was very competitive. And Brown, we all know, is right there in the title mix at 170. And he had his moments where, you know, he looked great in that fight. He had Brown in trouble. So he's at that level of those guys on the brink of a title shot. That's where Means is kind of sitting right there. And it's because of his nasty game overall. He's got the killer instinct. He's great on the feet. I mean, he can beat you with his punches, with his elbows. Yeah, he's proven that as well. He's got a submission game that's a little bit underrated. He's using his wrestling a little bit more offensively now. Once he gets you to the floor, again, with that killer instinct, he's just relentless on the ground as well. So really, he's a great finisher. He's tough as nails. He's hard to finish. And it's his fight to win or lose in this spot against Howard. So very difficult matchup stylistically for Howard because I just don't think Howard's going to be able to really beat him anywhere. His best path to victory in this spot, I think, would be putting Means on his back and trying to control the wrestling aspect of the fight a little bit more. I just don't think he's going to be able to do that with the improvement that we've seen from Means recently. I think it's going to be his fight again. He's going to be able to outpoint, if not knock out Howard in the feet. We did see Howard recently suffer a knockout loss, which was a little bit kind of, I don't want to say sad, but you know, you hate to see a guy that had a granite chin like that throughout most of his career get knocked out like he did by Larkin. So there could be some signs of a decline coming, because after that fight, he fought Pendred, which doesn't have that kind of knockout power at all. Now he's facing somebody that can finish him again. So we're really going to see if Howard is, in fact, in that decline spot, because if Means finishes him, then we could see to start to see a trend of Howard getting finished and probably not lasting in the UFC too much longer. Other than that, I'm hoping that it's a pretty competitive and a good fight, but it should be Means' fight again to win or lose. I mean, I think right now he's just on another level, and Howard is basically almost at a gatekeeper role, and Means is legit possible contender. If he keeps on winning and getting more momentum on his side again, I think he could make a possible title run at 170 the way the division is going, because he's right there with some of the best of them. But this is going to be a good quality fight. I am going to pick Means to win the fight, as he should.
This is just a terrible matchup for John Howard. Tim Means is going to have 7 inches in height on him. He's going to have 4 inches in reach on him. I believe he's the quicker fighter. Tim Means is the more technical overall striker. And then, more importantly, Tim Means is significantly more active and actually surprisingly better defensively than John Howard. Tim Means throws about twice as many and actually lands about twice as many strikes per minute as John Howard. So this is a type of situation where I think John Howard is going to be in big, big trouble unless he does several things to try to take away Means' advantages. That means get this fight into the clinch, get this fight to the ground. And John Howard, honestly, is not that great of a wrestler. I mean, he can be a grinder at times. He can make fights ugly, like he did with Uriah Hall. But I don't think Tim Means is going to let him do that. And if they go to the clinch, Tim Means is going to eat him alive with elbows and knees. And with that big height disparity, I think that those elbows can do some serious damage on the inside. So I just think this is an atrocious matchup for John Howard. And unless Howard is able to land that big haymaker or something, then Tim Means is just going to pick him apart from distance or smash him on the inside in the clinch. And if they do go to the ground, I can see Tim Means just reversing the takedown like he did with George Sullivan and then just battering John Howard on the ground. I just don't see John Howard being very competitive in this fight. And I'm all aboard Tim Means here big time. So my pick is 100% Tim Means. Now, kicking off the main card, we have a middleweight matchup featuring Elias Theodoro, who is 11-0, taking on Thiago Santos, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Theodoro -270, the comeback on Santos +190. Right now, looking over the line, it's -250 for Theodoro. The comeback on Santos is +210. So line margins, again, tightened up a little bit. Not a ton of action coming in either way. Theodoro is a very popular fighter. I mean, he's gaining popularity as we speak, and a lot of that's based on his performances. I mean, the guy's a heck of a grinder. He's got some stand-up skill. He's got some power. He's got some decent fight IQ to go along with it. The guy's in the gym all the time, working hard and constantly trying to improve. So a lot of good things to look at when you have Teodoro, because he's just got the well-rounded game and he's only going to get better. So good to see that. But he's facing a very dangerous opponent. I mean, if you look what Santos has done lately, for me, I haven't really been a huge Santos fan. I don't know. I just – there's something about him that I just don't have that confidence or that faith in him. But you can't not take away from what he's done. I mean, his impressive knockout over Enns, and then Bossy in the last fight as well, the head kick. I mean, it was a highlight reel on ESPN, for crying out loud. It was pretty good to see that as well. So Santos has length. He's got power. He's definitely got some skill on the feet. I'm probably underestimating him a little bit. I know he's always been a pretty good striker, but I think – his chin, to me, is a little bit suspect, always has been a little bit. And then, of course, I mean, if you're a good grinder, wrestler, you're able to put him on his back, you can outpoint him a little bit too. His takedown defense is okay, but in this spot, I think it's a bad matchup for him, honestly. I think Teodoro is going to look for the takedowns. He's, again, a very smart fighter. He's not going to want to stand and bang with Santos for very long, even if he does a little bit. Obviously, the fight starts on the feet, so he's going to have to a little bit, but I think he's going to really rely on just grinding Santos out up against the cage, getting those takedowns, getting top position, starting to unload some punches there, maybe even submitting Santos on the ground. So I think it's really a great matchup for Theodoro. If he's careful, and doesn't play around too much on the feet, he's going to win this fight. Now, Teodoro has enough power that I wouldn't be shocked if he does clip him on the feet and knock Santos out as well. But that's the area and the path of victory for Santos to accomplish his goal and pull off the upset here. So Teodoro has to be careful and just fight smart, and he should win this fight. So not much more to be said. I mean, this is – honestly, Teodoro is a more well-rounded fighter. But this is kind of like your grappler versus striker matchup here, in my opinion. And Teodoro is going to be the grappler. He should be able to get the fight to the ground, and he should be able to win. So I'm going to pick him.
The biggest advantage Teodoro has in this fight absolutely is the fact that he can get it to the ground, and he is pretty smothering there. The problem is, on the feet, he still has a ways to go. I think he surprised himself with how Roger Narvaez was able to actually outwork him a little bit in his last fight, and that caught him off guard. I think he thought his stand-up was a little better than it was, and you saw that he still has a ways to go there. Now, he still does land some good kicks. He's flexible. He's diverse. He has some power. But against a guy like Thiago Santos, I think Teodoro could get himself in some serious trouble if he decides to screw around on the feet a little too long. Santos has brutal kicks. He sets up combinations well. I completely underestimated this guy. I thought that Santos was one of those fighters that was fighting out of his weight class, that he was a one-and-done type guy that they brought in on short notice to face Cesar Mutanche, and he got blistered there, and I'm like, why is this guy even still competing in the UFC? And then and now look at him. He's picked up some impressive victories. He's got some nasty knockouts on his record, and he is a very dangerous stand-up artist. Now, that's the problem, is he's a dangerous stand-up artist, but not really anywhere else. I don't expect much out of him on the ground. If Teodoro knows what's best for him, he's going to close the distance quickly and either push Santos into the fence or take him down immediately. And once there, Teodoro is very dangerous. He has good top control. He has big ground and pound. He can go for submissions, or he can just ride out decisions. But I think with the way that Santos fights and how much energy he uses up trying to put his opponent away, I think that he'll run out of steam a little bit. And I can definitely see Teodoro picking up a finish on the ground. But seriously, he's got to be careful on the feet, because Santos, that last head kick knockout he had was brutal. So I think if Teodoro screws around or makes a mistake and walks into something, you could see a big upset here. But for the most part, as long as Teodoro has a good fight IQ and fights with a good game plan, he should win convincingly using the ground. So my pick is going to be Elias Teodoro, but be careful out there. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Sage Northcutt, who is 6-0, taking on Cody Pfister, who is 12-4-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Northcutt -705 to come back on Pfister +435. Right now, it is Northcutt -1250 to come back on Pfister +800. And you know what? When I did open this line, I did expect some action to come in on Northcutt. And honestly, I told the books out there, Five Dimes in particular, I told him, go ahead, let him bet it up a little bit. And because you know what, Northcutt, I know that this fight is made for him to win this fight. I understand that as well. I just don't have the faith out there that most of you guys do. I mean, it's remarkable. I know the kid's an athlete. He's got the sport karate background. He's worked hard in his wrestling. He's a pretty complete fighter, because he's got the takedowns. He's got some submission skill. He's got an advantage over Pfister for sure. But the problem is, I'm just not really sold on him yet. I mean, there's a lot of things that come into play here, including his resume. I mean, his last fight was by far the toughest test of his career. I mean, he passed it with flying colors, no doubt about it, because he was able to go out there and destroy a guy like Trevino, which is hard to do. I mean, Trevino's a pretty tough guy, so I got to give him a little bit of credit because he did that. But at the same time, I'm not sold yet on it. I mean, before that, his competition has been very weak, and he hasn't really been challenged. In fact, Pfister's probably going to be the best guy he's fought to date. So, you know, Pfister's a well-rounded guy. He's not exactly a slouch. I know they're putting him in this spot because many people are expecting him to lose this fight, and the UFC is as well, because there's a lot of hype behind Sage right now. So if he loses this fight, they're definitely not going to be happy about that with Pfister. So it is a winnable fight for Sage. I think he can get the W here, but he's got to be careful, because Pfister has a little bit of skill everywhere the fight takes place. I mean, he's got a little bit of knockout power. Obviously, he's got a wrestling background in his own right. He likes to take the fight to the floor and grind people out a little bit as well. So he's not bad. He's definitely going to be, I think, a bigger challenge than most people indicate. For sure, it shouldn't be a 12-1 favorite type of line here. even with a guy like Fister, honestly. I mean, Northcutt has a lot to prove yet. I understand the hype, and everybody's making this guy out to be the next contender at lightweight. He's got a long way to go. And if the UFC keeps feeding him the right matchups, including this one here, I mean, we could see Northcutt gradually improve, and then he gets a couple solid wins under his resume. I'll be a believer, because the guy definitely has talent. He's got potential, but he's just not there yet. He's not there for it to really be, like I said, a crazy high line like this, even against a guy like Fister. So for me, I'm sure we're going to see Northcutt go out there and do his thing, probably finish this fight fairly early, maybe by submission, and maybe possibly by knockout. I mean, the guy does definitely have some talent offensively. It's just defensively, I mean, dating back a long time ago, I know it was early in his career, amateur stuff or whatever, he got dropped. I mean, he got beat, he got knocked out. That doesn't sit very well with me. I know it happens to fighters at times, but defensively, there is a concern with Northcutt. Even beyond that fight, if you look back at his footage, he has been hit and he has been bothered by that. But he's found ways to win that fight, to win fights, period, and found a way to just really explode onto the scene for the UFC. And the UFC loves it right now with all the attention Northcutt is getting, for sure. And his athleticism, I mean, outside all the crazy flips and all the crazy kicks and all that stuff that he does, I mean, he's really gaining a lot of fans and momentum out there. So at age 19, a lot of room to improve, so this kid could be a really legit prospect one day. But as right now, I'm not sold, like I said, on him as much as you guys are. I do expect him to win this fight. I mean, the writing's basically out there on the wall. Fister will pull off a huge upset if he wins, so I understand that. So I am picking Northcutt to win. There is no way I would bet him, though. I mean, even if the line was cut in half, I wouldn't bet Northcutt in this spot. So those of you that do, good luck to you. You're braver than I am, that's for sure.
I don't know what you're so worried about, Nick. Looking at Sage Northcutt, according to his UFC statistics, in all of his UFC fights combined, he has landed 22 strikes a minute. That is one strike every 3 seconds. That is incredible. All right, let's be serious here. That was one fight. He won it in like 30 seconds and landed about 15 strikes. So it's going to be a little skewed. Most guys average about four strikes a minute. So now, with Sage against Fister, Fister is going to be a decent boxer. So Sage will hold a little bit of a height advantage, but he's actually going to give up 2 inches in reach, believe it or not. Now, Fister having the reach isn't going to matter that much, to me at least, because Sage is so much quicker, so much more explosive and athletic, that he should be able to land those big crazy kicks that he likes to throw, or just get out, land something, and get out of the way before Fister's really able to fire back. Now, where Fister will have some advantage is potentially in the wrestling department. Fister is a solid overall wrestler. You saw in his last fight against Yuzdenis Cedeno, who is also an incredible athlete, and Fister was able to just get him down repeatedly, put him on his back, and keep him there. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be able to do that to Sage, because Sage actually has pretty good wrestling and big slams and takedowns in his own right, but that is a threat. So I think you're going to see a nice little test here for Sage. But honestly, Fister isn't much of a step up from Trevino. So this is definitely a big winnable fight for Northcutt. Fister is pretty hittable, so Northcutt should be able to crack him pretty hard on the feet. And I think Fister doesn't respond very well when he's the one getting bullied. And I think if Sage is the one working for the big takedowns and slams, I don't think Fister's going to like it, and he could potentially give up a submission along the way, as Nick said. So I think this is absolutely a setup fight for Northcutt. He should go out there and take care of business. He did partial training camp with TriStar before going home. I expect he's going to get some great advice from Firas Zahabi in his corner for this fight, and I expect Sage Northcutt to have a pretty convincing win. They wouldn't be putting him on this main card otherwise. So my pick is going to be Sage Northcutt. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have Jim Miller, who is 25-6 with one no contest, taking on Michael Chiesa, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Chiesa, the favorite, minus 140. The comeback on Miller, even money. Right now, looking over five times, it's Chiesa minus 125. Miller is plus 105. There has been some two-way action coming in. About lines bounced around a little bit. Now it seems to settle back where it kind of opened with the line margins tightening up. So competitive fight. I mean, it is a pick 'em type of fight for sure, because if you look at it, I mean, Miller's resume and what he's been able to accomplish throughout his entire career is great. I mean, he's always been a top-tier lightweight, just really close to getting that title shot. Unfortunately for him, it just hasn't worked out. But that being said, he has it all. He has the striking. He's got good technical striking. He's got a little bit of power to go along with that. Of course, he's got good wrestling. He's got the good ground game to go along with it. I mean, dangerous submission game. One of the best offensive submission fighters, really, that's been in the lightweight division in the UFC. I mean, it's so smooth. How many people could really submit Oliveira and the spot that or the way that Miller went about that? That was, in my opinion, that was a great submission win over a great submission fighter as well. So that's how talented this guy is. I mean, he's capable of submitting other guys that are BJJ studs on the ground. And then as far as on the feet goes, I mean, again, he's got that experience now. He's got pretty good boxing. He's got good fight IQ. He's a pretty tough guy overall. So a lot of great things to like about Miller. But Chiesa is the type of guy that's actually improving fast. I mean, he's getting better and better every fight that you see him. He's starting to get more challenges now, and he's starting to win those fights. I mean, Colton Smith, he's not in the UFC anymore, but I mean, that fight for him was a tough fight because you have another outstanding grappler that actually had some success early on against him, but Chiesa was able to weather the storm and then in that second round come back out and submit a very talented grappler in Colton Smith. And Trinaldo is a pretty solid win looking back now, especially how he was able to get the fight to the ground, able to just basically have his way with Trinaldo, control him, do some damage on the ground as well. So that's a tough out. That's a tough win. So I'm seeing the gradual improvements from a guy like Chiesa. Unfortunately, that cut, the doctor stoppage against Lozon, I would have loved to see that fight play out because that was a very exciting fight. And that would have been a good notch if he was able to pull off that victory as well. So he's had some very successful performances and very good fights, and I think he is continuing to improve. Again, even his stand-up skill, he's going to have some reach over Miller in this spot, about 4 inches, I believe. I think he's honestly probably going to be able to get the fight to the floor and be on top of Miller throughout the fight. It's not going to be easy because Miller has pretty decent takedown defense, but we have seen Miller be put on his back in the past. And once on top, I think Chiesa is going to be able to actually control a little bit, do some damage there. I think on the feet, even though Miller's a little bit more technical, I think Chiesa will use that reach and utilize a decent amount of striking too. And he's going to be able to tag Miller from time to time as well. So if it stays upright, I'm expecting it to be competitive. Chiesa is going to have the reach advantage. He's going to be able to mix in some kicks from time to time as well. But Miller is going to be the more technical fighter for sure. But then on the ground, even though Miller's a stud on the ground as well, I do favor Chiesa just a little bit. Both these guys are dangerous in their submission game. So really, we could see a sub from either guy. But overall, another spot for me where I like Chiesa, he's a younger fighter. He has more upside right now. And this would be a great win under his belt over a veteran like Miller that has all sorts of respect. So it would help him climb the ladder that much more. And I think he's getting Miller at the right time. So in my opinion, this is kind of what the fight was made for, to give Chiesa a solid win. And I think he's probably going to get the job done. I think he outpoints Miller to a very competitive, close decision win. I think that's how it's going to play out. So my pick is going to be Chiesa to defeat Miller.
Yeah, this is a pretty evenly matched fight. Jim Miller obviously is a huge veteran of the sport. He's been there, done that, everything in the UFC. He's faced the who's who in the lightweight division, but he is on a decline. Even though he is coming off of a victory over Danny Castillo, you have to think that Jim Miller is starting to be on his way out a little bit. I'm actually surprised that he's still ranked in the top 15. Michael Chiesa, on the other hand, definitely on the rise. The guy, ever since winning that season of The Ultimate Fighter, he has really been not turning down challenges. I mean, he's gone out there, he's battled guys like Joe Lozon, Jorge Masvidal. Now, he didn't win those two fights, but those were great opportunities for him to gain a lot of experience against some savvy veterans. And you look at his performances there, they were excellent performances. I mean, he hurt Masvidal on the feet, believe it or not. And then the Lozon fight was really competitive. And I mean, that was extremely exciting. I think a lot of people were disappointed that it ended up being stopped by the cut. So I think that Chiesa has taken a lot of experience from those fights. And then this is finally going to be that veteran where he gets over that hump a little bit, because Chiesa has been able to go out there and take care of business against other people. And as Nick mentioned, that Trinaldo win actually looks really good now, after Trinaldo's really started to turn it on a little bit in the lightweight division. And I think Chiesa is going to be able to use a lot of those physical advantages in this fight. I mean, he's going to have 5 inches in height, 4 inches in reach, 3 inches in leg reach even. And I think what's going to happen here is Miller has had some issues in the past with some longer, lanky, grappling-focused opponents, where he got submitted by Nate Diaz, who first hurt him on the feet. And then even Pat Healy, a guy that he had a competitive battle with, Miller faded down the stretch a little bit, and then Healy got a hold of him and submitted him late. So I think that could happen here. Jim Miller does not have incredible conditioning. He does usually push a high pace, but that is to his disadvantage usually because he runs out of steam a little bit. And while Miller is probably the better, more technical striker, I think Chiesa will throw with just about the same amount of output. And Chiesa might actually be slightly more powerful on the feet, even if he doesn't have the better technique. So, and if this fight goes to the ground, I actually feel Chiesa does have the better wrestling of the two. And Chiesa has gone in there against some excellent grapplers and has held his own. So I don't think he'll be in too much trouble against somebody like Miller. Although, I mean, he did get submitted by Masvidal. But since then, I mean, you look, his last fight, Mitch Clark, that is a very, very dangerous ground fighter. And Chiesa was able to hold his own against him. So I think what's going to happen here is Chiesa is going to stand a little bit. And then as Miller starts to slow down, I think he's going to start working for takedowns. And as long as he can avoid getting armbarred or triangle choked or something from top position, then he's either going to be able to ride out a decision, or maybe late as Miller starts to slow down even more, he could pick up that patented rear naked choke that he loves so much. So my pick is going to be Michael Chiesa as well. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a women's strawweight bout between Rose Namajunas, who is 4-2, taking on Paige Van Zandt, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Van Zandt -165, the comeback on Namajunas +125, right now looking over at the line at 5 dimes. It is Van Zandt -185, the comeback on Namajunas is +160. So back and forth action early on, honestly. I mean, it's been bouncing around as well. Right now, line increased a little bit, so books are getting hit a little bit more with Van Zandt, but there's a ton of people coming in on Namajunas as well, and that'll continue to happen. So I'm expecting this line probably to drop at a certain point, even further down to where it is now, maybe even below where I opened it at 165 at some point too, because a lot of people really respect Namajunas. And you know what? She's a stud. I mean, she's a tremendous fighter, no doubt about it. She has skill everywhere. I mean, she has good striking. Obviously, her ground game is legit as well. Offensively, she's tremendous with her submission skill. She's long for the weight class. She has a lot of good things going for her. Her popularity, she's marketable. I mean, as far as that aspect goes, this is a win-win situation for the UFC, because if Rose pulls off the win over Van Zandt, I know that right now Van Zandt's the person that they're hyping and the more popular of the two fighters. Well, it's close. I mean, obviously, Namajunas is very popular as well, but this is why it's a win-win situation. I mean, the victory for either one of these ladies will definitely be a great thing for them, and it'll boost their career to a whole other level and eventually probably end up getting a title shot along the way, which is going to obviously be a whole other level there. But that being said, this is going to be a competitive matchup. I mean, Rose has a way to win if she's able to get the fight to the floor, if she's able to catch Van Zandt unexpectedly on a round and finish her by submission. Wouldn't really be that much of a shock, but at the same time, I think a lot of people are underestimating Van Zandt a little bit, including myself early on, especially in her career. I think she's improved a lot, and she's improved fast. That's the scary thing about Van Zandt. I think, I mean, she pushes such a high pace. Her cardio is off the charts. She's relentless with her attacks. She has good wrestling, good scrambling ability, and I think that's probably what's going to win her the fight, honestly. I think Namajunas is, again, a very talented fighter everywhere the fight takes place, but I do see some flaws in her game, and I think she tends to slow down as the fight goes a little bit, and I think she tends to get outworked by her opponent. So if she cannot finish Van Zandt, I don't think she's going to win the decision here. I think she might be able to last, and Van Zandt might not finish Namajunas if it does go closer to the full 5 rounds. But at the same time, I don't see her really getting the nod or getting the decision over Van Zandt. So I'm going against the grain, especially from the most part. I hear a lot of people thinking that this is going to kind of be an easy fight for Rose. I don't think so. I think that Van Zandt has improved enough. I mean, obviously training with Alpha Male and crew there as well. She's getting a lot of great training on the ground, especially with chokes, with arm bars, everything. I mean, the guys at Alpha Male, they excel in all areas, but especially the ground and their submission fighting as well, it seems. So Van Zandt is definitely not going to be out of her element here at all. And in fact, I think it's really her fight to win or lose. If she doesn't get caught in the stupid, she's going to win the fight. So I am buying into the hype a little bit more from Van Zandt, and it's not because of all the popularity and all the talk. It's just watching her fight and watching her improvement. If she keeps on continuing to improve at this level, watch out. I mean, she could be a legit title contender, no doubt, in the future. So I'm going to lean towards Paige Van Zandt. I know that's, again, not a very popular opinion out there, but even though she is a favorite, it seems, but I think that she is going to win this fight. So close fight, competitive fight. I hope we see a great battle between two really good fighters here, but I lean towards Van Zandt to win the fight.
If Rose Namajunas is going to win this fight, it's going to be early. Her biggest advantages are in pure submission skill. Obviously, she's had some very impressive submissions in her career so far, and probably in her experience. Even though Paige has actually fought more professional bouts, if you factor in Rose's performance on The Ultimate Fighter, I mean, she went out there, she beat Alex Chambers, Joanne Calderwood, and Randa Markos all by submission quickly. And then, if you look at her UFC performance, she's faced Carla Esparza, Angela Hill. I mean, she's had some very tough fights, a lot tougher than Paige VanZant. Actually, the toughest fight for Paige VanZant is actually somebody that also defeated Rose, who was Tisha Torres. She beat them both by decision. So I think what's going to happen here is Rose is going to be very aggressive early. She's going to look to get this fight to the floor. She's going to look for that quick submission. And if she can't get it, I think she's going to be in trouble. Because even though Rose is probably the better stand-up fighter, I don't see Paige letting this fight hang around on the feet too much. Paige doesn't have the greatest wrestling in the world, but what she does have is this insane pace that just wears her opponents down. I mean, it is constant pressure in your face all the time, and she just doesn't give you room to breathe. It's amazing. It's one of the most interesting strategies of any fighter I've ever seen. I mean, she just never lets up, does not give you a lot of openings either. And as she's starting to become a little bit more technical, she's only going to get that much more dangerous. And what's going to happen here most likely is Rose will probably work a little bit on the feet, maybe get some kicks going, maybe try to get her boxing going. Paige is going to press her into the fence and then just start kneeing the absolute crap out of her legs and body. And if she can, she's going to try to drag this fight to the ground, and then she's going to start dropping those little pitter-patter ground and pound. And if Rose is not able to get a submission in that first round or maybe early in the second round, this being a five-round bout, Paige is just going to wear her out. You saw in Rose's fight for the title against Carla Esparza, she just wasn't quite ready for that level of competition. And I'm not saying Paige is quite Carla Esparza level yet, but she pushes an insane pace that makes it Esparza-esque, where she just is going to grind Rose out. If Rose does not get that submission, Paige is just going to break her. I really, truly believe that Paige can break Rose here, especially with this being a five-round fight. I do not see Rose hanging in there for the full five rounds. I think at some point, Rose will just have had enough from this constant onslaught. And I don't know how Paige is able to do it, but she just never looks like she gets tired at all. And she just keeps going and going and going like a miniature Energizer bunny. And I see her wearing Rose out eventually and getting that stoppage. So my pick is going to be Paige VanZant. As long as she weathers that early submission storm, she should be in really good shape here. So Paige all the way. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 80. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Wednesday night following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAoddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick's or Mike James's premium bets. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsors, Five Dime Sportsbook and Countermove. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.